Radio Free Press, a podcast from the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media.
There's been some advancement in the extent to which women are shaping and presenting the news and information which we receive, but the rate of progress has been pitiful. The number of women contributors actually reporting and presenting on radio and television and having their own bylines in the newspapers is still way below 20%. Women in frontline journalism are nowhere near achieving membership of the so-called 30% club, the target for women with high-profile roles in politics, commerce and finance. So there's a fundamental problem over representation, even before considering long-standing grievances over the way women are being portrayed in the media. With me to discuss these shortcomings are six active campaigners: Lisa Campbell, editor of Broadcast Magazine; Shannon Harvey, a women's rights campaigner; Liz Howell of City University; Fiona O'Cleary, a freelance journalist from the NUJ; Jess Hurd, a photographer; and Anne Field, a media campaigner. Let's begin by asking each of you, what do you think of the current state of position of women in the media? Lisa Campbell, let's start with you.
I think the situation is still pretty shameful, actually. I mean, when we get our figures in from City University every month, it appears that we're making very little progress. Male experts still outnumber females on a regular basis. And, you know, I'm pretty shocked that this is still the situation in 2012.
Liz Howell, is that how you see it with all the research that your university does?
Yes, absolutely. We do quantitative research, so students monitor set programmes and they count the number of women experts there are on these programmes. It isn't about women journalists, because we felt that research was being done elsewhere, and we thought it'd be really interesting to look at women in positions of authority and influence and how often they were invited to start to talk on these programmes. And it started for me with sheer personal irritation at the Today programme, because I would listen to that in the morning and it would be 50 minutes before I heard a female voice, and then it would be the newsreader. So we started looking at that, and we found that there's been very little progress. We do find that sometimes, particularly on the Today programme, the presenters will make remarks about, people say we don't have enough women on this programme, ha ha ha, and that's almost adding insult to injury. So I don't know whether flushing out these figures is doing much good, but at least we know what the figures are now.
Well, let's turn to the National Union of Journalists. Fiona O'Cleary, you're from the NUJ. You're a freelance journalist. What's your reaction? You work on the front line.
I do work on the front line, but in the newsroom I work in, we do have quite a few women. My concern would be with the typical profile of the women that I work with, so, which is not a personal comment at all, but there are very many women of 30 years old and younger. There are not very many women above that, and I can say of about 30 people I work with, I'm the only mother in the group, and I would say that the choices that women have to make at work are as significant as whether or not there are women at work or not.
Anne Field, you're a media campaigner. You have worked in Fleet Street when there was a Fleet Street. I suppose you came across, did you, this macho culture, which makes it difficult, as Fiona says, for many women to hang on to top jobs in journalism and the media.
Well, I don't know about hanging on to top jobs. It was getting to the top jobs in the first place. But quite honestly, although there clearly have been some progress, we're not a million miles away, are we, from being barefoot, pregnant and in the kitchen. And I think that there are still quite a few newspapers and media organisations who would prefer us to be back exactly in that situation. There's a lot of tales to be told about what's happened over the years, but I think that some of the hypocrisy that is spoken about in the media about women's role in society is really quite nauseating when you consider how women are treated, both as workers as well as represented.
That's the point, of course, that we can ask and turn to Shannon Harvey for an answer. You're an active campaigner on behalf of women against violence and abuse. What do you think is the importance of the fact that women have so few places in the top echelons of the news media?
Well, I think women in higher positions in the media is really important, but actually the women that we're really working with are women that aren't ever going to be at the top in newsrooms very often. they're more at the bottom, and it's their voices that are not heard and are being portrayed by journalists. We did some research that found that of violence against women articles, 80% of those appeared after page 10. But then we've got page 3 in The Sun, and that really shows you women's place in society, I think.
Just heard, you, of course, as a photographer, you're chair of the National Union of Journalists Photographers branch, you're really out on the front line, aren't you, in what is a male-dominated part of journalism, photography, photographers. What do you feel about this fact that women have failed, it seems, if we look at the statistics, to make the sort of level of representation which they really deserve?
I'm not sure we really categorise it as women failing. I think that's probably part of the problem. But no, there's a massive disparity between men and women in the jobs that certainly I do. If you look at the political conferences covering those this year, it's something like 3 women to 40, 50 male photographers, and that's just not on, and that hasn't changed in a decade or more even that I've been covering that. You know, we're also very concerned about online bullying and the kind of boys' club mentality that's really restricting women from doing the job or staying in the job.
The portrayal of women clearly is one of the key issues that we have to address, because that clearly, I think, the consensus already is that that's one of the failures, I've used the word again, but it's one of the problems which arises because women aren't properly represented when it comes to frontline journalism. Liz Howell, you were saying that this question of the way women are treated is something that's particularly of concern to you at City University, where you're the director of the broadcasting unit.
That's right. It's really interesting, when we did the research about the influential women and the women experts, we had to get the students to write down what all the women in the programme were doing, and all the men as well. And it was really interesting to see how many times the women appeared as what the students called victims. And so you would have a programme like Daybreak, for example, which would have a lot of women on the programme, and you think, oh, this looks good. And then you'd realise 60, 70% of those women were actually victims. So you've got to ask yourself, if a woman is there crying or being portrayed as vulnerable and victimised in some way, is that the sort of role model you want? And so, yes, you might get more women, but if they're in roles where they look weak and vulnerable, does that really help in the cause of promoting women as authority figures? Probably not. And that's a difficult one.
Lisa Campbell, what do you find then at Broadcast Magazine? What do you think is coming up through your pages about this sort of problem that Liz has just described?
Well, this is the whole reason we launched our Expert Women campaign, because Liz wrote a comment piece for us remarking on the situation on the Today programme, and then we said, actually, is this an isolated incident or is this happening on a regular basis? So then, you know, we commissioned Liz to do this on a monthly basis, and, you know, the figures were just, you know, appalling every month. I mean, you know, we've got one example where on BBC News at 10, the flagship news programme, there was not one female expert for the, you know, the whole duration of that. And so we launched this campaign to say to broadcasters, we really need to do something about this. You know, you all have to be aware of this situation, that men typically outnumber male experts by, you know, 4 to 1, sometimes as much as 9 to 1 in the News at 10 example. And when women are used, they're used as victims or case studies. So we created a pledge to say, we would like you to sign this pledge, and you know, and the wording is sort of, they will attempt to increase the number of expert women interviewed in broadcast news to reflect the growing number of women in significant roles in business and the professions. We will raise awareness of the ratio of women presented as victims or case studies, and aim to narrow the gap between the number of male and female experts used in programmes, and encourage more women experts to take part as well. We've had Channel 4 News have signed the pledge, and Sky News have signed the pledge. The BBC haven't, and neither have ITV News. And we also have a petition on change.org to try and get the public aware of this and to put pressure on the broadcasters as well. And we've got about 1,500 signatures on that petition. So we launched the campaign in February, and we're just keeping going, keeping putting the pressure on, you know, writing lots of features and articles, and the Nationals sometimes follow this up as well. So we just really need to get the message out there and get the broadcasters to turn around and address it.
Therefore, this whole question of underrepresentation of women, and the fact that women aren't being properly portrayed in the media and don't get the chance to come across as experts. Anne Field, with your experience from Fleet Street, where do you think this originated, this fact that in journalism there is this macho culture which somehow is preventing women making the breakthrough that they'd like?
Well, I think journalism essentially reflects perceptions of women in society. And journalism is not immune from that, and it really is a reflection of how women are perceived. So women's jobs are not perceived still, remarkably, as important as men's. Women's points of view, women's experience, women's education, women's qualifications, women's appearance is regarded in a different way to men's. It's important. That's about the only thing that is important about us when it comes to in the media. So it's no surprise at all that where women are expendable, all the activity and the campaigns over the years for equal pay at all levels in the media, in regional newspapers, in national newspapers, in broadcasting, in radio, women's pay has been expendable. Very often men have been threatened to not support the women. So women's pay has hardly been advanced. Men's pay has been reduced, particularly on the production side. And some of the newspapers today who portray themselves as supporting women, for example, the Daily Mail, their most shocking history of the treatment of women workers is to dismiss a woman worker within 3 days of her child dying, having been born 3 days earlier. So, you know, that's the sort of position of some of the Fleet Street employers with their equal opportunities policies. Their track record is absolutely horrendous.
Jess Heard, you're describing the problems that you face actually out working as a journalist, as a photographer. Do you think that this sort of macho culture among journalists is something which is making it even more difficult, do you think, for women to make a breakthrough? I mean, do you feel that women perhaps are being harassed at work? I know this is one of the issues which the National Union of Journalists is very keen on addressing.
We definitely are taking these issues up and very seriously. You know, we passed a motion at our delegate meeting it's just gone about sexism and bullying in the media, and that we are going to have an active campaign to stamp it out. And of course, you know, if you look at the journalism courses, there's more women than men go on these courses, and where do they end up? You know, often if they do get a job and they're working on a picture desk or whatever, they get pigeonholed for the soft stories, as women say. And yeah, there has been sexism on the job as well. I've spoken to sports photographers, and they, you know, get shown porn to get a reaction, you know, on the job, and, you know, various sexist comments. Another colleague who's working in a particular sector of the industry had her bag kicked and her laptop broken. There's a level of protectionism within this as well. Don't think that there isn't. It's not just pure sexism. It's like, we don't want you in this sector of the industry because we don't want anyone else in the sector of the industry.
How do you explain the fact that, for example, one area where women in journalism seem to be making some progress is sports journalism? That's certainly my perception. I often talk to young journalism students, and some of the women are very keen to get into sports journalism. Do you, Fiona, think that there's anything there in the sense that there are perhaps some areas of journalism and broadcasting and radio and TV where women can make a breakthrough, and there are others where they can't?
I think one of the things I would most like to see is a broadening out of the discussion as to what women do, what different women want to do. Is you don't just have to have a certain number of women in a newsroom. It can be a very self-selecting bunch of people, and some of the worst sexism in a newsroom can come from other women, depending on what their own choices in life have been, or whether they feel happy about the choice they've been forced to make. Yes, I think there are traditional areas for women, the health and the education stories, but it depends what your interest is. If you can find enough people of your like-minded interest, perhaps the new media opens up opportunities in a way that haven't been there before.
Well, perhaps before we come on to this very serious question of the portrayal of women and whether in fact this does leave women open to more violence, perhaps I should explain some of my own personal baggage, because of course I can remember myself some of the milestones for women in journalism. In the 1970s, for example, when I was a BBC political correspondent, there were great waves because the BBC appointed their first woman as a political correspondent at Westminster. Then in the 1980s, I was a member of a very hardline male group, and I think even you as a photographer, Jess Hurd, would have been frightened by some of the action of the Labour and Industrial correspondents, because we were male only, and we only changed our rules in 1976 to allow women in, and in the 1980s we had one. So it wasn't a very good record. So if we can turn now to Shannon, you've heard my figures. Do you think it's this history of the fact that it has been so difficult for women, which has led to some of your concerns about the way women are portrayed?
I think so. I think it's about the history of inequality between men and women. Unfortunately, that's not history. That's very much current. But I think, you know, these things around the portrayal of women in the media, it does very much have an impact on the ground. So we heard before that journalists are part of society, and so obviously that's going to reflect. But actually also the rest of society picks up from the media what everyone else is thinking. So we did some research with women survivors of sexual violence just a few months ago who were intoxicated at the time that they were raped. And these surveys were happening just as the whole Ched Evans case was being reported. And we had women time and again, without being specifically asked about that case, saying, actually, hearing all of that, seeing how it's reported in the media, I'm not going to report. So it has a very tangible impact on women's access to justice.
If we look at the BBC, for example, I mean, there's no doubt about it that its reporting, especially of some of these issues, is of critical importance, but I suppose for the newspapers it's even more important. Is that the point you're making, that perhaps it's the way the newspapers have addressed this over the years, Shannon?
I made that point because of the research that we've done, particularly with newspapers, but I think it goes across the media. And, you know, there's a very good point made earlier about Daybreak and victims being portrayed. And it's very much also about how victims are portrayed as women and very feminised. So we constantly get requests to speak to victims as case studies. We had one recently for a victim who was attractive and between the ages of 18 and 35. Now that's just outrageous, in my opinion. But it happens all the time.
Jess, did you want to come in on this?
I was just going to bring up the point on justice and getting justice, because an NUJ colleague of mine, Barbara Lindbergh, took a case against a professional organisation in Dublin that she was trying to get into, representing photographers, and that she was excluded from. And it was a very significant victory. But she says herself, it didn't feel like a victory. You know, it was a long slog. She was isolated on the ground, and it was horrible. It was horrible. I mean, it's great that women stand up, but they need to be given the support through their organisation. She actually challenged that on her own against very very expensive lawyers from the other side, and won, and that kind of thing is brilliant. But we don't want to let it get to that point.
Now, we know that the various groups have given evidence to the Leveson inquiry, hoping that somehow his inquiry might address some of these fundamental problems. Liz, is this an issue on which the City University has taken an interest, the way in which Leveson is looking at some of these issues, like page 3?
I think that City University has looked in detail at the Leveson inquiry. And one of the most interesting things about the Leveson inquiry is how few women have given evidence to the Leveson inquiry about any element. And that just shows you how male-dominated the journalism profession is. And I think it is absolutely tragic if what journalism is doing is portraying women in a way that enfeebles them, that makes them feel they can't go for justice, that makes them nervous. I think this whole issue of appearances, it's absolutely fascinating, because when we looked at our figures, you'd think if appearance was an issue, then in radio you'd have a lot of women, because appearance isn't an issue. Guess what? It is worse in radio. I'm not quite sure why this is. It may be that women's appearance helps get them on the television, but it certainly doesn't help them get on the radio.
What's your opinion on this point, Lisa Campbell? Because, of course, there is a problem, isn't there, in the sense that, I mean, this will perhaps be my male prejudices coming out and you'll all shoot me down. But Liz Kershaw, for example, was saying on Newsnight only the other night that only 17% of the presenters on music stations are women. Yet many of the people who listen to music stations are perhaps women. Is it that they perhaps prefer male voices? What's your opinion as editor of Broadcast Magazine?
Well, you know, there's certainly the defence from some of the producers that I spoke to that, you know, they have research that says anyone, whatever sex you are, prefers a male voice when it's something, you know, serious. They want authority, and authority is male. The other, you know, defence sort of I've been around lots of newsrooms, you know, from Channel 4 News, Sky News, the BBC, you know, and really the feeling across the board that it's very difficult to find female experts in particular fields, particularly engineering, technology, science, business. And, you know, so if the news agenda is dominated by the economy, then you tend to get more males on screen. Now, you know, I believe that there are women in those positions. It might be a bit harder to find them. And so perhaps there's a bit of laziness in newsrooms where journalists are relying on their, you know, tried and tested contacts and don't really want to take a risk on new people.
Jess, I think you were shaking your head at this thought that the male voice is one that women perhaps like to hear at moments of crisis.
Well, I think it's just because they are used to hearing male voices at times of crisis. That can be the only reason I can see.
Let's just, in our closing moments, bring right up to date. We've had this whole Jimmy Savile scandal, the expose of what's been happening and the failure of the BBC and many other institutions. Now, at the root of this also is this question of harassment, the question of women being harassed. I know it's an issue which the NUJ, for example, is taking up. They are looking with the BBC at whether there are proper procedures so that women can report if they're being harassed, and, of course, whether more should be done to protect children. Lisa Campbell from Broadcast Magazine, is this an issue which you have been taking an interest in?
Yes, it is, because we had several women come forward, and a lot of them anonymous, perhaps obviously talking about the experience that they'd had on set, especially going away on location, and the suggestion that what is seen by the male on set is banter and it's just sort of part of the fun, whereas in fact is actually offensive. And when women have complained to, you know, the director in charge, they've been seen as, you know, troublemakers or you know, kicking up a fuss about nothing. It's just a bit of a joke. So I'm hoping that the fact that this is all being, you know, sort of put out there now, that people will start to assess actually what is acceptable behaviour, what should women be able to complain about and feel that they can blow the whistle.
Liz Howell, what's been the position at City? Have you been looking at this too?
We've been interested in this, and the students have been very interested in it, and we've talked about it a lot. One of the things that's so interesting is the huge generational difference, because I'm in my 60s and worked in Leeds and remember all of this, and they're very, very different, and they can't believe that we allowed ourselves to be treated in that way. And when I think about that, you know, we didn't even know the word paedophile. It's much more of a modern terminology. We didn't have the language to express what was happening to us. You know, I can remember hearing the word patronising around about 1978, and thinking, yes, that means something to me. But we didn't even have the language to express it. I cannot tell you how different it was then, and I am so glad that this is coming out now, because it will stop it hopefully ever happening again.
If I could turn, yes, to Fiona.
Can I just add to that, on the issue of young people and exploitation, I think it can happen in the workplace as well. In the course of the NUJ's Cash Fight for Interns campaign, I've met quite a lot of interns, many of whom are young women, and they've all spoken, well, not all of them, but many of them have spoken of the culture of self-exploitation that goes on, or people are being harassed by older male editors, young interns, many of whom are pretty young girls, or they feel they have to actually make the overtures themselves to the editors to get the work commissioned, which is absolutely appalling.
Anne Field, with your Fleet Street background, presumably you have seen this position over many years of where women have perhaps been exploited at work, not just in the pages of the newspapers.
There are many instances, and it was very difficult for women to, and still is, to make their case known, particularly where they feel under pressure. The jobs, there have been huge jobs losses in the industry as well. But I think the best example, really, the most outrageous example, was a long time ago, but it still holds good today because it's still the Page 3 issue, when Samantha Fox was used by Murdoch during the course of the dispute, and she paraded herself in her full glory in front of the Pricketts during the course of the dispute as a process of insulting workers who'd been sacked. And if you like, the Page 3, which is still paraded today, is the ultimate insult to all women, both at work and readers as well.
Thank you. And Jess Hurd?
I just wanted to come back on the culture question, because I don't think the culture has changed at all, and it's equally as difficult to report these things. Yeah, the recognition of paedophilia is there now, and that's great. But, you know, even today on an online forum, I was told that one of my colleagues suggested that anyone who wanted to challenge me for my position as chair should have a naked wrestling match and the winner gets the chair. All my male colleagues wrestling naked with me. Do you know what I mean? This kind of a banter is seen as acceptable, and I think it's completely misplaced and has no place in our industry.
Could I just come back on that? I'm not saying that it's great now by any means. What I am saying is it was really bad then. And I think one of the things that has changed now is the internet, and that's another form of bullying and pressure that we certainly didn't have to put up with in the 1970s, and that's a particularly nasty thing. But it was pretty terrible then, and I do think this banter, this bullying, this having a go, and this awful thing of, oh, you can't stand a joke, it's really, really horrible.
Finally, to Shannon, from your group's point of view, how significant do you think it is that these allegations are now coming forward about Jimmy Savile, and so many people are now prepared to explain and tell of their experiences?
Well, I think the women have been trying to tell of their experiences for a long time. It's just that no one's been listening. I think it's really about time. I'm not going to congratulate anyone for finally coming forward and speaking out, because I think they should have done it many, many years ago. I think in some ways language is very important in the media, and words like pedophilia, I don't know how helpful that is, because actually we're talking about sexual violence and rape, whether if it's of children and girls or of women, and I think we need to label that as it is, rather than somehow excusing everyone else by labelling some people as particularly evil, because this is a problem that we have across society. It's hugely prevalent, and we need to deal with it.
Well, with that very profound thought, we'll close this discussion. My thanks to Shannon Harvey, to Liz Howell, to Lisa Campbell, Fiona O'Cleary, Jess Hurd and Anne Field. This podcast for the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom was produced by Claire Colley.